we know that nationally, at least some 700,000 people are incarcerated daily simply because of their inability to post bonds. So they're bonds that most of us, or many of us, would be able to rally and get a community to help us post. So at least that many daily. As far as mothers, between jail and prison, at least 80%, so 8 in 10 of women who are in a cage in America are a mother. And of those, at least 2/3, so at least 2 in 3, are mothers of minor children. We know that mothers of, you know, older children need their mamas too. But in terms of those crucial, we all know about the importance of attachment. And so mothers who are incarcerated, at least 2/3 of them are mothers of minor children. It can get hard to drill down within a certain county jail the exact numbers, because even within the Denver area, there's so much variability in what the different county jails will tell us about the demographics of their of the women who are caged there. But we know that there's hundreds of women in jail here, and certain counties, Denver will tell race. Douglas, for example, doesn't tell race, but they show pictures. Jeffco, Jefferson County, doesn't do either. So it gets tougher to ascertain exactly how many Black and Indigenous and Brown women are within the populations, but you can certainly sit in municipal court in Aurora or in any city in the greater Denver area on any given docket morning, and you can see for yourself how overrepresented Black and Brown women are.
What then is the ripple effect out into the community of this high rate of incarceration of women of color?
I start to answer it by saying where to start and where to end, right? So on an immediate, you know, on a sort of single day basis, when a woman doesn't come home or is expected to come home and doesn't, if a child can wind up in foster care, taken out of their school, moved, all of these things, which we know, right? We've got decades of data. It should be common sense, but we've got decades of objective data showing us how disruptive it is for a child to be subjected to a loss of a parent like that. We also know when we say disruptive that the ripple effect is, of course, for the individual harm to a child, but there's inability to have stability in relationships, in employment, in education. And there's a part of me that feels like it should be a no-brainer that if someone can be out on, for example, a $500 bond, then they shouldn't be in. So when we're looking at the ripple effects, it also is an absolute direct economic hit to a family. If the woman is able to post that bond, that's $500 that could have been spent on health, you know, health supplies, childcare, education, birthday parties, music, whatever the family wanted. And if she's not able to post it, then that's income that's out of the family while she's in. So the ripple effects, they start small, they extend, and the magnitude can really be hard to capture.
And this broader issue of being incarcerated because of an economic circumstance, because you can't make bond. And some of these bonds are, as you said, maybe $500 or $1,000. So people who have even just a little bit more money are able to free themselves. What's the broader scope of that problem?
I should back up enough to clarify one thing, that is, so usually in the greater Denver area where we do use the services of bondsmen and bail services, and we believe very strongly that we need to end cash bail entirely. We need to abolish that part of the system. But while we have it, it's important to understand that when we talk about a woman who has a $500 cash or surety bond, that doesn't even necessarily mean that she needs to have $500 to free herself. It means she needs 50 or 60. Because you usually would pay 10% to a bondsman plus at least a $10 fee. It can range based on the county. So just to be really clear, when we're talking about a woman who cannot get out on a $500 surety bond, that means she hasn't had access to approximately $50. So when we think about the scope of it, we should be able to see at least two things about anyone who's in on that level of a bond. One is that surely the city or the county or the state, whoever has put this woman in jail, surely she's not seen as very dangerous, right? Because surely we collectively wouldn't put someone in jail and let them out on a $500 bond if they were dangerous. That's one thing we can deduce. And another thing we can deduce is just how poor and how unable to access a financial resource a woman is if that amount of bond is holding her. It's both the amount, and it's also, you know, in the age of cell phones, many of us don't know anyone's phone number. You know, we may know our grandmother's landline from years ago. If you're in jail and you don't have access to your cell phone, even if you were given it, it's died. There's no charge. It's difficult to figure out who to call. We don't have numbers memorized. And so to access that, if you don't happen to have that money on you or be able to call upon it. So the scope, it varies. And the fact that there are some things that people working for justice in Denver and people on all sides of the criminal justice system in Greater Denver can be proud of. There's some really meaningful steps that have happened. In Denver itself, we're seeing far more PR, personal recognizance bonds, being offered by judges and magistrates. So that would be where instead of requiring a person to pay for their freedom up front, they're essentially given the option to promise to come back to court, and if they didn't return, they would then pay. So that's a fairer way to do things. So when you ask about scope, we have to consider there's some basic issues of fairness and equity. If you get arrested on a trespass charge in Denver County, and you might have a very good chance of being released on a PR bond, and yet there's the unpredictability that if you get arrested on the exact same minor charge just across the border in one of the surrounding counties, you might not have access to that PR at all. So the scope is you know, local, and it extends nationally. And that's why in Denver, it was really important to us to align with the National Bailout Collective, which is just what it says, a collective of organizers who are trying to do this work nationwide. Because the American system of bail and bond, there's only one thing that's sort of a common feature across the country, and that's that the bail and bond system is unjust and incredibly exploitive and unfair. But how it actually works in practice varies wildly from court to court, city to city, and jurisdiction to jurisdiction.
So how is this working for this Mother's Day weekend? I know you yourself, you're on your way to a jail in Douglas County, and I think you're going to spend the next few days just posting bond for people. How do you find out who needs help, and how can listeners help with this effort?
So those are really great questions, and thank you for them. I'm actually literally sitting in the parking lot outside of the bank right now to withdraw more cash. And so I stopped so that I wasn't talking on the road. But so the plan for today, I'm with the Denver Justice Project, and we, along with Black Lives Matter, or just Black Lives Matter 5280, are exactly what you said, going to be doing that for the next few days. So, and some more info about that for people, we would love them to go to, it's just a simple URL, www.blackbailout.org. That's us here in Denver raising money and doing this work. So process-wise, you asked, how are we identifying the women? There's been a few ways, and it's shifted over the week as more people have learned about what we're doing. What we started, and we just launched this on May 1st, so we are just at day 10, and we started by pulling up for each county. So we're concerned with five specifically: Denver, Arapahoe, Douglas, Adams, and Jefferson County. Each one of those counties has what they call an online inmate locator, inmate search, and you can, it's public and without a fee, you can go online and you can search through the thousands of people who are in custody in Greater Denver, and you can see their gender. Every county lets you see their gender, and then beyond that, it varies. So in Denver, for example, we can see a woman's ethnicity, we can see her gender, we can see when she was booked, so we know how long she's been in jail, and we can also see the amount of her bond. And so we started by identifying what looked like really vulnerable cases. So when I leave the bank with this cash, my first stop is Douglas County, and that's because the woman, two women that we identified there were high priority based on the amount of time they've been in. So we found them by literally just looking in on the online inmate locators. Douglas County also has pictures of women who are in their jail. And while that's uncomfortable for me, generally for this effort, it was helpful for us to identify women of color who we know are overrepresented. So So that was the first way we found people, is we generated a list. The second thing we did is we have attorney volunteers and clergy volunteers who then went and met in person with the women we identified. We needed autonomy and consent are very important to us. So we know that, you know, almost the vast majority of people who are in jail and can be bonded out want to be bonded out, right? That's a pretty common sense notion. But we also know that there are reasons why someone might not want to be bonded out. If, for example, their court date is just a day or two away and they don't have a safe place to be, that might be one. If they are from out of town and they wouldn't have a way to travel back and their court date is very soon. Also, just plain autonomy and consent. So the first thing we did is locate the online locators. The second thing we did is we had our attorney volunteers and clergy volunteers go and meet with the women to assess if they wanted to be bonded out, and also to assess if they had any particular relief needs, transportation, things like that. The third way that we identified folks is by putting out a call to our volunteers have called now every public defender's office in the greater Denver area. So both the state public defender, CSPD, the Colorado State Public Defender offices in the counties, as well as the municipal public defenders in cities like Aurora and Denver. We know that these attorneys are on the front line every day seeing seeing people in greater Denver, how their processes work, and they know their clients. So the next way that we found people was from attorney referrals. And we also have put out a call. Word of mouth is really important. So we want people to contact us if they have a woman in their life, a family member or friend whose bond is $1,000 or less and hasn't been able to be posted. We would like to help with that. So that's how we found them. As far as process, we have a schedule today. We're going to go to the jails in order. We sort of started with a reverse pyramid of the jails where we have the fewest bonds to post. So that there's two in Douglas County. When I leave there, I'll be going to Arapahoe, where I plan to post two more. And from there, Denver. Denver and Adams are where most of the women we've identified are. And we're going to go from there. We're going to post the bonds until the money runs out. I also have right now with me, I have a trunk full of thanks to volunteers in Jefferson County with Jeff Cocan and with a group called I Support the Girls. We have some really lovely period kits and personal care kits that we're able to give, as well as RTD travel vouchers, light rail and bus that were also donated. And so if women want them, we have them and would love to give them to them. And we're going to post bonds until the money runs out.
Now, of course, this is an issue that happens well outside of Mother's Day. Obviously, Mother's Day is the focus for this particular effort. But how can people help with this weekend's effort, but also year round with this?
So I'm glad you asked, and for a couple reasons. You're exactly right. So Mother's Day is the natural natural day to highlight, to press this issue to the forefront. We also recognize that it's rather arbitrary. Indeed, there are mothers in jail all year round. So how people can help, there's many ways, but two that are particularly important to us. One is we really want to make sure that people understand that while this particular action is Mother's Day based, this isn't ending with Mother's Day. This is going to become a standing community bail and bond fund. So the way that bond works is when the woman appears for her court date, the bond is released, and it's released to the person who posted it. So in this case, that's us with the Denver Justice Project and Black Lives Matter 5280. We've established a standalone community account for this. There's the account that is being used to post the bond is only used to post the bonds. That's the only thing that money is for. So when people give at blackbailout.org, it goes directly into the bond fund, and that's the fund I'm withdrawing from to post these bonds. So when a bond is returned, it goes back into the fund. We're going to do this again next month in June for Juneteenth and Father's Day. And after two actions, we're going to then have it become a standing fund. So what we want, number one, is to abolish cash money bail entirely. As we're working towards that legislatively and in the various ways that can happen, we want people to know, we want attorneys, families, community members to be aware that we are here and we will continue to post bond. So Mother's Day is Sunday the 13th. If someone has a loved one who, you know, May the 14th is unable to post a $50 bond or whatever it is, if we have it, we would like to help. So how they can help is those two ways. One is continuing to give at blackbailout.org and knowing that it's going to become a standing community fund. The other thing is, while individual women's stories aren't to be used as tokens, right? They shouldn't be forced into the spotlight to plead their case. This entire action is important to us, that it's used to highlight the injustices of money bail, the inequity, the racial injustice of it. And so we want people to be aware, your listeners and the folks that they'll spread the word to be aware when ballot initiatives are coming up that would relate to curtailing the ability, limiting the ability of exploitive bonds to be imposed. We want people to be aware and to have our name in mind, because we're going to continue to work on the front lines for the systemic change that we need. So we want folks to continue to give. We want folks to pay attention to the legislative actions. And then, if I can, just on a personal note, stop calling the police on Black and brown people is also a thing that people can do. I feel like lately we're seeing publicly more and more often these videos that are heartbreaking of Black and brown people having the police called on them. And we want your listeners and beyond to understand that those interactions often directly lead to the sort of over-incarceration that results in a woman being in jail on a trespass ticket, where she may have gone into a hotel to use a restroom, or she may be homeless and have fallen asleep on a bench. So the three things I'd ask: one is continue to give, two is pay attention legislatively and be prepared to lobby your officials for this sort of bail abolishment and reform efforts, and three is, just on a personal ask, stop calling the police on poor people and on Black and brown people, because that directly contributes to the law enforcement interactions that result in poor people being in jail on minor charges at Mother's Day and all year round.